Who's ready for a sermon this morning? Today is week 5 of Lent. I know, right? Week 5 of Lent. We're in this series called Letting Go. Each week we have been looking at different ways of living that we tend to hold on to. And these are not good ways of living. Typically, they are destructive habits and behaviors that we pick up along the way. The whole idea of this series is if we were to let go of these destructive ways of living, we might create some space in our lives to receive resurrection. And I think you're all here this morning because you desire the new. Maybe you're here this morning and you need some more hope in your life. You find yourself in need of more joy. There are things which have caused pain. There are things which have, you just know they're not the best for you. Lent is a time in which we prepare ourselves for resurrection by letting go of the things that are not serving us well. During Lent, we listen to the Spirit. We open our hearts to hear what is God inviting us to let go of, so that by the time Easter rolls around, by the time the tomb is empty on Easter morning, we have space for all the goodness and the new life and the salvation that Christ brings. Now, this morning, the title of our sermon is Letting Go of Your Pain. Last week, Keaton came up to me. He goes, "Hey, what are you working on? What are the next couple of sermons?" I rattled off about 3 or 4 that I had in mind. This was not one of them. I was not expecting to give this sermon. I sort of stepped into it this week. I found something in a story that I have read many, many times before. Maybe it's a familiar story for you as well. There was something new that I saw in the story, and I thought, oh my goodness, this is so relevant for me. And I thought, it might be something relevant for all of us. Because we all go through life and we all experience pain. And sometimes it's really difficult to move beyond the pain that we experience. We hold on to it. Sometimes it becomes our identity. It defines who we are. But I think this is true for Lent, but this is true for any time of the year. The Spirit is inviting us to transform the pain that we experience. We have to honor it. We have to respect it. We have to acknowledge that it's there. But I believe that the Spirit wants us to move beyond it, not in a way in which you forget about it or pretend it doesn't hurt, but in a way where you take it and transform it into something new and something beautiful. I think through our pain, through our moments of disappointment and heartache, the new can be birthed, something new that we had never expected before, something that we didn't even see coming. And this has been true in my life. Maybe it's been true for you as well. Well, when I look at this morning, who has heard of Elijah, the prophet, before? Who's heard of this guy? Yeah, he's a familiar face in the Bible. He's mentioned quite a bit. The story that I want to pick up is found in 1 Kings chapter 19. But in order to tell this story well, we need to figure out where we are in the story. I'll say it again. I always say it. I think it works really well, the fact we meet in a movie theater. I hate entering a movie even 5 minutes late. I like to know what happens. I once ran a red light trying to get to a movie on time. A Star Is Born. I got one of those tickets in White Plains, too, running the light for it. You know how they have those video-enforced photo or those photo-enforced red lights? Remember getting it in the mail and saying, "You ran a red light." I'm like, "No, I didn't." And then I saw the video. I'm like, "Oh, yeah, I did run the red light." All to get to A Star Is Born on time. And I still was late. Got a ticket and was late. Ugh. Here we are in the story. 1 Kings chapter 19. Elijah, the great prophet. There is a showdown on the top of a mountain known as Mount Carmel. And the showdown is between the Lord, Yahweh, the supposed God of the Israelites, and this foreign god, Baal. All the prophets of Yahweh, of Israel's God, are there. All the prophets of Baal are there. How many prophets of Israel are there? The answer is right there on the screen behind me. 1. Elijah is the only faithful prophet of Yahweh. How many prophets of Baal are there? 450. It's a bit lopsided. 1 to 450. Then Elijah gathers all of the Israelites to the top of the mountain as well. Says there is going to be this showdown. All the prophets in the nation, whichever God they follow, whichever God they serve, are going to be there. I want all of Israel to be there as well to see exactly what happens. Because the question that Elijah is asking to all of the Israelites as they are gathered, who will you follow? Who will you devote your life to? Will you follow Baal, this foreign god, or will you follow the true God of Israel, Yahweh? Elijah wants all of Israel there. And then do we have our sound, Ted? Because here's a bit I want to show you. I want to set the scene for you to show you what it would have looked like on Mount Carmel on that fateful day.
Now, for the thousands in attendance and the millions watching around the world on HBO pay-per-view, ladies and gentlemen, from Mandalay Bay, Las Vegas, let's get ready.
This is what it would have looked like, a full audience. The stadium is filled. There's not an empty seat. The popcorn, the vendors are out. The lights are bright. All of Israel, the entire nation, is assembled there. And then Elijah says, here's what we are going to do. We're going to have these altars, and we're going to see which God comes through. We're going to see which God actually lights the altar. And in order to make it even more of a challenge, because Elijah likes challenges, he decides that he is going to dump water on his altar, which, if you know anything about fire and water, they don't really go so well. But Elijah's up for the challenge. Well, which God do you think came and lit the altar? There's Elijah right there. His altar is lit up. Yahweh comes through. We have the prophets of Baal. They are being blinded by this great light because their altar has not been lit. For Elijah, it is a great victory. He gets the belt, the heavyweight champion. He is on top. And then there's some gory details that happen in the story. Elijah goes through, and Elijah, we're told that he slaughters all the prophets of Baal. So it's a bit of some gruesome details, which is a whole other sermon that we can talk about at another time. We would be sidetracked for the next 45 minutes to an hour if we were to talk about that. There's what happens. And then we pick up the story, 1 Kings 19. Now Ahab, who is the king of Israel, he told Jezebel. Jezebel is his wife. Jezebel is not a good person. She is the one responsible for leading Israel and Ahab astray. She is the Baal worshiper. It is through her that Baal worship has become a focal point of the Israelites' life. Jezebel, not good. Ahab, obviously not good because he is just following along with what his wife is telling him to do. Because the king was the one responsible for making sure that the entire nation followed Yahweh. He's been led astray. He told his wife everything Elijah had done, how he had killed all the prophets, 450 prophets with the sword. Jezebel sent a messenger to Elijah to say, "May the gods deal with me, be it ever so severely, if by this time tomorrow I do not make your life like that of one of the prophets that you killed." In other words, Jezebel wants Elijah dead. "Bring him to me. If he's alive, I will kill him. If you happen to kill him yourself, that is okay. There is a bounty on Elijah's head." Jezebel wants him to die. Story continues. Elijah was afraid, as any of us would be. Again, we talked about this a couple of weeks ago. Fear is a normal human response. He's afraid, and he ran for his life. When he came to Beersheba in Judah, he left his servant there, while he himself went a day's journey into the wilderness. He's retreating. He's afraid for his life. He needs some space. He wants to get off by himself. He came to a broom bush, sat down under it, and prayed that he might die. Sounds a bit like Jonah, who we looked at last week. I've had enough, Lord. Take my life. I am no better than my ancestors. In other words, he finds himself to be a failure. I'm no better than all those who weren't successful before me. Then he lay down under the bush and he fell asleep. Take my life. Now I'm going to take a nap. This phrase, I have had enough. You ever been there before? You ever find yourself uttering these words? You're tired. You're exhausted. I mean, how does this feel when you get to this point? How does it feel? You're depressed. You're exhausted. Hope has left. Maybe prior there was this sense of hope that you carried within you, but then certain experiences happened and all of a sudden the hope that was there, it's sort of left a void in your soul. You're burnt out. You're apathetic to all things. I've had enough. I can't do this anymore. I don't really care anymore. I can't keep carrying this. Elijah's saying, I'm done. I'm done. Have you ever found yourself there? Maybe you find yourself there this morning. There's this fatigue that is set in. You've been carrying something for so long and you just, it's gotten too heavy. I just can't do it. There's a loss of energy, a loss of purpose, meaning, enthusiasm. You have no more vigor, no more strength. And what happens is, I mean, I've been here before. You lay down, you take a nap. I mean, that's how it feels. You can't do anything else but close your eyes and rest and sleep. Whether because you're apathetic and you don't care, you take a nap, or just simply because you are exhausted. Elijah is like us. I have had enough. Take my life. There's nothing more for me to do. There's nothing more for me to accomplish. I can't win. And then he falls asleep. All at once, as he is sleeping, an angel touched him and said, get up and eat. And then I love it. He looked around. He's like, food? Where am I going to get this food from? I mean, just imagine this scene. Elijah, he's right there in the wilderness. He's under this bush. There's nothing. We're in the wilderness, remember. We're not at Chuck E. Cheese's. You know, we're not at Five Guys. We're not at Applebee's. There's no restaurants around at all. He's in the middle of nowhere. There's not a 7-Eleven down the street. And he hears this voice, get up and eat. He looks around, and there by his head, talk about a bizarre story, was some bread baked over hot coals. Hey, that wasn't here before. How did that get here? Did a leprechaun come and deliver it? Like, what in the world? It's a St. Paddy's Day joke for you. I have to work one in, right? Come on. And there was a jar of water. He ate and drank, and then took another nap, because that's how it works. You know how this is. You're exhausted. You're burnt out. You're depressed. You take a nap. Maybe you eat a little bit. You force some food, and it doesn't really do too much for you, and you fall asleep again. Right? You ever been there before? I've been there before. There's nothing you can do but close your eyes and sit on the couch. The angel of the Lord came back a second time and touched him. Get up and eat. Here's some more bread. Here's some more water. For the journey is too much for you. I love that. I love that. There's so much wisdom right there. This is how God deals with us. This is God's interaction with us. Yeah, on your own, the journey's too much. I'm going to offer you sustenance, energy, strength. The thing that you are lacking, the thing that you on your own cannot create, I will provide it for you. Because I know how you're feeling. I know what you've been through. The journey, it's too hard. It's too much for you. Elijah got up, ate, and drank. Strengthened by that food, he traveled 40 days and 40 nights until he reached Horeb, the mountain of God. There he went into a cave and spent the night. Two things to look at. First, Mount Horeb, also known as Mount Sinai. Have we heard of Mount Sinai before? Mount Sinai is an important part of the Old Testament. This is where Moses went in order to receive the Ten Commandments. The Israelites are camped at Mount Sinai. They have just escaped Egypt. God meets with Moses for 40 days, 40 nights on the mountain. We'll talk about 40 here in 1 second, because 40 is a pretty big number in the Bible. Elijah has traveled to where it all began. Mount Sinai is where Israel essentially became a nation, where God said, here's how I want you to live as people. Remember, the Israelites, they had been slaves for 400 years. God comes and he offers them a vision of what it means to be fully human. The Ten Commandments, they're not simply do's and don'ts. That is a boring way to look at religion. Here's what I can do if I follow God. Here's what I can't do if I follow God. Instead, the Ten Commandments are a vision about what it means to be fully human. Here's how to live into your fullest humanity. Here's how to live as true people. You were told, do this, do that. You're not human. That's stripping human dignity when someone is telling you exactly how to be. Instead, God offers this compelling vision. Here's how to form a nation. Here's how to be a people. Here's how to live into the truest sense of who you have been created to be. So Mount Sinai, Horeb, where Elijah travels to, it's back to his roots, the roots of Israel, back to where it all began. Then the number 40 is a highly symbolic number in the Bible. 40 is, it signifies a time of purging, a time of cleansing, or preparation for something new. How many days are in Lent? What are we doing now? We're purging ourselves. We're doing a detox. All the toxins that have accumulated in our soul, we are flushing them out because we want the new. We want room to receive the good and the hope. So when we're told that Elijah travels for 40 days and 40 nights, we think, 40? What? There's something going on here. There's a purging going on within Elijah's soul. There's a cleansing. There's a preparation for something new. Think about Noah in the flood, 40 days, 40 nights. Think about Jesus in the wilderness, preparing himself for ministry. How many days did he fast for? Which I do not recommend for you. This is, please do not take this as medical advice. How many days did Jesus fast for? 40 days. Moses, how long was he on top of the mountain? How long were the Israelites wandering around the wilderness? Elijah travels 40 days, 40 nights because God is about to do something new in his soul. Now, question to see if you have been paying attention. How has Elijah been strengthened up until this point? Food. By an angel. Supernatural strength. The strengthening of Elijah, it's not in his own power. It's nothing that he himself can manufacture. Sometimes, when we are so exhausted, when we are so burnt out or depressed, we think, okay, if I just clench my fist a little more, if I just dig my heels in a little bit, if I just close my heart off a little bit more so I don't have to feel the emotion of what I'm feeling, if I pretend a little bit more, or sometimes it's not even us. Sometimes it's the messaging from other people. You just need to put your head down. You just keep walking. You just got to get through it. You have the strength. But what we find here in this story is that in his own strength, Elijah doesn't have the power. This is supernatural, divine strength that is being offered to Elijah. So sometimes when you're feeling exhausted and burnt out, you need to do the very opposite of what our culture tells us to do. or sometimes what that own your own voice tells you to do, and you simply need to take a nap. Sometimes you think you got to keep going because that's where you're going to get to the end of what you're going through. But in reality, the very thing that you need to do is sleep for a week. Don't fight it. Elijah doesn't fight it. And here's the other interesting thing I think about this story is in his retreat, God is with him. God is strengthening him to retreat. God is strengthening him as he rests and withdraws himself from normal life. Sometimes we think God is in the engagement with life, but what we find here in the story is that God is actually with us as we draw back and rest and take time to heal our souls. Here he is at the cave, and the word of the Lord came to him. "What are you doing here, Elijah?" There are three ways in which we could read this verse. First way, what are you doing here? God could be talking about the physical location, about where Elijah is. What are you doing here at this particular spot? Why have you come to Mount Horeb? Why have you come to this particular location? When I first started to go see a therapist, I remember sitting down on the couch. The first question he asked was, "How can I help?" One way in which we can read this verse is God asking Elijah, "How can I help? What are you doing here? Like, why'd you come here? What's going on? Talk to me. Let me know what's happening here. Spill your soul." Another way in which we can read this verse, what are you doing here instead of there? Elijah was a prophet of Israel. God could be saying, why have you abandoned your post? You're supposed to be here in Israel, or I guess there at this point. You're supposed to be over there. Well, why have you come here? Why have you left Israel? What's going on? What has caused you to retreat? What has caused you to abandon your post? And then here's a third way in which we could read this verse. What are you doing here? In other words, this is like one of those existential questions. What are you doing with your life, Elijah? Which if anyone ever asks you that question, sometimes you kind of shrink back a little bit because it's normally not a good question. There's always some probing thoughts like, what are you doing with your life? What's going on here? What are you all about? It's one of the questions that parents will typically ask their kids. Like, what's going on with your life? Like, what are you doing? Three ways in which we could possibly interpret this question. How does Elijah answer? He replied, I have been very zealous. I haven't just been zealous. I have been very zealous. For the Lord God Almighty, the Israelites have rejected your covenant, torn down your altars, and put your prophets to death with the sword. I am the only one left, and now they are trying to kill me too. Elijah here is playing the blame game. You ever been there before? Hey, God, look at what I did for you. I was the faithful prophet. There were 450 who were following other gods. Look at how faithful I was. I've done all that you have asked me to do. I've done my part. I trusted. I followed. And now look where I am. Look where that has left me. I have been faithful to you my entire life. Other people haven't been faithful. They seem to be doing okay. Look at me. I'm by myself, the top of a mountain in a cave. I've been faithful, zealous in following you, and now I'm being hunted. My life is in danger. What Elijah is doing is he is distancing himself emotionally from this situation. The prophet and God are supposed to be partners. Elijah is a spokesperson for God. But notice his choice of words here. The Israelites have rejected your covenant, torn down your altars, put your prophets We do this to protect ourselves. We distance ourselves emotionally from the pain that we experience. And to a certain extent, that is healthy, because sometimes the pain is too much. It hurts too much. And so we have to put some distance between ourselves and those painful moments that we experience. What Elijah is doing here is he is expressing all of his pain from the disappointments he's had in life. Let me tell you why I have buried my head. Let me tell you why I have run away. Let me tell you why I've given up. Let me tell you why I've lost hope. Let me tell you why I have retreated to this mountain. See, we all have our pain from disappointments. We become disappointed with God. God, look at what I did for you. I was faithful to you. I followed when they didn't follow. Why does their life seem to be going smoother than my life? We have disappointment with religion, disappointment with the church. This happens quite a bit. We become disillusioned with our faith, with our church experience. We have disappointment with our families. People let us down. The people closest to us let us down. Disappointment with our friends. We get stabbed in the back. We thought we could trust them. And then they went and said that about me? Oh, I was way too trusting. Sometimes we steal ourselves. We steal our hearts and we'll say, well, if that's how it's going to be, I'm never going to trust anyone else ever again. Like Elijah, we distance ourselves emotionally in order to protect our hearts so that something like that can never happen again. What about the times where we find disappointment with ourselves? Man, I thought I was beyond that. And here I am. I've blown it again. I thought I was bigger than that. I thought I had overcome that, and I'm back here in this place again. What about our dreams, our aspirations? Disappointment when the things that we hope for, the dreams that we try to grab hold of, don't come to fruition. Our lives are filled with disappointments. Pain that comes from those disappointments. And we find ourselves like Elijah, where we're depressed, exhausted, burnt out. We'd put so much energy into something, and then it's not happening the way in which we expected it to happen. And all we can do is sit there and take a nap. Now, notice how God responds to Elijah's anger. I've been zealous for you. They've torn down your altars, killed your prophets. Here's what God says. The Lord said, go out of your cave. Stand on the mountain in the presence of the Lord, for the Lord is about to pass by. Then, and here's a pretty famous verse, a great and powerful wind tore the mountains apart and shattered the rocks before the Lord. But the Lord was not in the wind. After the wind, there was an earthquake, but the Lord was not in the earthquake. After the earthquake came a fire, the Lord was not in the fire. And after the fire came a gentle whisper. When Elijah heard it, he pulled his cloak over his face, went out, and stood at the mouth of the cave. How does God respond to Elijah's anger? With his presence. God's presence. Elijah has just vented. He's poured it all out. He hasn't held anything back. Notice how God responds. There's no words. God wasn't in the earthquake, wasn't in the fire, wasn't in all the big, mighty things that you typically equate with God. There was no shame. God's like, Elijah, come on, dude. Like, get back in the game, bro. No, there's no shame there. There's no finger pointing. There's no berating. There's no crack of the whip. It's simply presence. How does God respond to us in moments of anger? Even those moments when we blame God for our situation, not with shame, with presence, with love, with grace. That's it. The only way in which God knows how to respond to our anger is with love. I don't know, maybe that's something you need to hear this morning. Sometimes we keep beating ourselves up. Why am I angry? I shouldn't be angry. We keep shooting on ourselves. And the only thing that God is thinking, the only thing that God desires is to bless us with love and grace, because that's what heals. That's what heals the pain that we experience. A voice said to him, Elijah has left his cave. He's standing there in the presence of God. A voice says, familiar question that we just heard a few minutes ago. What are you doing here, Elijah? Again, three ways to answer this, to understand this question. Here's what Elijah says. He replied, love it. I've been very zealous for the Lord God Almighty, as if, God, did you not hear me the first time? I'm going to reiterate what I'm going to speak a little slower for you to hear. Maybe God is a bit hard of hearing. I've been very zealous. The Israelites have rejected your covenant, torn down your altars, put your prophets to death. I'm the only one left, and now they are trying to kill me too. Here's how God responds. The Lord said, go back the way you came. Go to the desert of Damascus. When you get there, anoint Hazael, king over Aram. Anoint Jehu, son of Nimshi, king over Israel. And anoint Elijah from Abel-Meholah to succeed you as prophet. Go back. It's the Hebrew word shub, which is a great word. You should use that this week. Someone will be very impressed with your Hebrew. Go back, return. You know what this means? What God is inviting Elijah to do is return to who he truly is. Because often what happens is when we experience pain, when we experience disappointment, when we distance ourselves emotionally from life, we have a distorted version of ourselves. What God is inviting Elijah to do is return to his truest self. You're a prophet. You're my spokesperson. I've been with you through this journey away from Israel, this journey to Mount Horeb. I will continue to be with you every step you take. The presence that you just experienced, it's not a presence simply for this mountain. It's a presence that travels with you wherever you happen to go. I know you've been hurt, and it's okay. It's okay that you're angry. I know that you've experienced pain. We're going to get through it together. Don't keep hiding your life away in this cave. You've had time to retreat, to refresh your soul. You have had time to rest, and it's all important. But the 40 days is up. The 40 days is over. It's time for you to re-engage. It's time for you to return to who you have been created to be. We all need times of solitude and retreat. Eventually, the time of retreat ends. And with the presence of God, we must return to who God has created us to be. God gives him some tasks. Essentially, he's saying, you're not done. You wanted to die. You thought it was over, but in reality, it's not done yet. Your life has meaning and purpose. Often that's what happens. We get disappointed and we think, I can't amount to anything. I've tried and tried and tried, and I'm not having any success. The things that I was hoping for, the things that I wanted to see happen, the ways in which I wanted God to use me, well, they're not happening. But God is saying, your life, it still has meaning. It has purpose. I see you. I see your faithfulness. It has not gone unseen. Other people might not see it. You might not see it, but God sees your faithfulness. God's saying, keep going. Israel still needs you. Now, Elijah has a choice in this matter. He can return, or he can keep running, because we all have a choice with our lives. God might place something in front of us. There might be an opportunity in front of us. We can choose to accept and step into that opportunity, or we can keep running. We can keep closing our hearts off. We can say, my pain is too much. I am not going to return because I could get burned again. Elijah could succumb to his pain, or he could transform it, use it for something good. How does Elijah respond? Elijah went from there and found Elisha. God honored his prayer. I'm the only one. Elijah was saying, I need some help here. God provided an assistant, one who would come after him to show Elijah, you're not alone. There's others like you. There's others with you. And Elijah went and he found him. Elijah decided, my 40 days, I was refreshed. I met with God on this mountain. I'm now traveling from this mountain with God's presence, ready for the next task. Now, the question for us this morning is the same question that God asked Elijah on the mountain. What are you doing here? For every single one of us sitting here this morning, this is the question. As I said, three ways to understand this question. I don't know which way of understanding the question you need this morning. Maybe this is you. What are you doing here in this physical location? What are you doing at church this morning? Why have you come here to this community, to this gathering? Do you find yourself here this morning in need of renewal? You need God's grace. You need God's healing. So you're here at church this morning because there's a sliver of hope within you that if I were to meet with God's people, if I were to be in a church service this morning and peer open the scriptures and sing some songs with other people, I might find the renewal that I desire. So what are you doing here this morning? Do you find yourself in need of renewal? Have you lost hope? Have you lost strength? Or what about, what are you doing here instead of there? Do you find yourself in a time of retreat? You've withdrawn. You've been burned before, wherever it might be. And so you find your soul is closed off to the world and to hope and to love. And so you've retreated. Well, the question for you, what are you doing here? Have any of us abandoned that which you know in your soul is your calling? There's something that fills you with life, and you know that this is what you are meant to do with your life. But because it hasn't happened the way in which you were hoping or expecting, you've given up. And you're under that bush, like Elijah was under that bush, saying, I'm done. Is anyone here this morning, you find yourself running from your pain and your disappointment? What are you doing here instead of there? Maybe it's time to reengage. Maybe your 40 days are up and the Spirit is whispering to you, it's time to get back into the game. Or a third way, what are you doing here with your life? Have you lost all hope? Have you just given up? Do you feel like your life lacks meaning, lacks purpose? What's that next assignment? My prayer for you is that you would hear the gentle whisper of the Spirit saying, it's not over. your life still has meaning. We need you. We need your gifts. We need your life. This world needs your presence. So what are you doing here this morning? This is the question God is offering to each of us. And may you find the answers, the grace, the healing, and the purpose that you truly desire.